Hello and welcome to Haaretz Weekly, your audio guide to Israel, the Middle East and the Jewish world. I'm Simon Spungin. On today's show... It might be summer and we might be in the middle of a global pandemic, but more and more Israelis have been taking to the streets in protest. To protest what, exactly, is open to interpretation. Almost inevitably, however, these protests have been accompanied by violence. Not exclusively by the so-called anarchists and Bolsheviks protesting, though. For the most part, the worst weapon they've been wielding is some pretty acerbic wit on their protest signs. Joining me today to shed some light on who's protesting, who's responding with violence, and what the country's leaders have said about it are a pod favourite and a debutante. In a little while, I'll be dialing up Judy Maltz, who'll be telling us how young Israelis are rallying round the Black Flag protests. But first, joining us from the front lines of the revolution in Jerusalem, I'm delighted to welcome Haaretz's Nir Hasson. Hi, Nir. Are you well?
Yeah, fine.
Good. Another late night for you in Jerusalem, right? What time did you get to bed?
Last night, around 4 o'clock.
Wow. Wow. Okay, well, it's good job it's the middle of the afternoon and so you've had a chance to rest. So listen, you've been reporting up close and personal from the demonstrations near the Prime Minister's residence in Jerusalem. Can you tell us what the protests are about?
I think the most interesting point about these demonstrations is that we cannot really map the people around in this protest. There are so many groups and so many activists and so many people from all kind of groups and places that it's very difficult to understand what's going on. There's no clear leadership. But the point is that they have a very clear goal, and this is to kick Netanyahu out of the prime minister office.
Some of them are focusing on economic matters, some are focusing on the corruption, some are focusing on, if anybody remembers the annexation, then some are focusing on that. It does seem, though, that as you say, Netanyahu is the focus point and the rallying point for all of these demonstrations. Is that enough to keep a coherent protest alive?
No, it doesn't seem enough, but it's enough for them. What I mean is that, as you say, there is no... You cannot point on one reason for those people to get out in the street and protest. It's a combination. It's like a feeling of overflowing of the corruption, the economic crisis, the mismanagement of the crisis. The trial, the Netanyahu trial, etc., and it feels that more and more Israelis feel that all of this together is concerning their own life, and that we have to go on the street, and it's more than everything, it's rage, and this rage addressed to Netanyahu. Now, for now, it's enough because they have a very clear goal, and the slogan is, Netanyahu have to go. But it only started, okay? It's only 2 weeks since the first big demonstration in Jerusalem. So we have to wait and see what will be in the future.
Now, you say that there are all sorts of disparate and different groups rallying. Are they all from the left?
I think most of them, yes. Most of them. I saw, like, yesterday, the gay community came, a gay community activist came, and youth movement, and some politicians from the joint list, MK, other came over, and I guess most of them are from the left. The interesting thing about the demonstration yesterday was that you can here and there, there were some people who are not like the left type. Some ultra-Orthodox Haredi people came around, some, religious, some people that says that they are used to be liquid supporters only lately, and they change their mind. So,
but because of Netanyahu's corruption?
But they are the minority. I think that most of them are from the left. They are very young. Mm. They are not professional protests. For many of them, it's the first demonstrations that they take part in. I think that most of the people who were arrested, it was the first arrest for them. And this is what is so interesting about this protest. It came from bottom up. It came from young people, and it has no leadership.
Is that what
so
makes
it's very
it different?
Hard to understand where it goes.
Is that what makes it different from previous? I mean, thinking about the social justice protests from 9 years ago, which kind of fizzled out and went nowhere. That this is one of the things that makes this protest and the sense of what's going on at the protests, it's different, right?
Right. There are a few characters that is very similar to 2011. And the young activists and the lack of leadership. But 10 years ago or 9 years ago, they didn't have a very clear goal to the protest. Mm. I remember that we cannot understand what actually they want. And here they do have a very clear goal. So I think this is a very, very important difference. And those demonstrations came on the background of the protest against Netanyahu in the last 3 or 4 years in the street in Petah Tikva against Mandelblit and etc. But it's different. What happened in the last 2 weeks in Jerusalem? It's new powers, it's new people, and it's so different than anything that we saw until today.
And presumably that makes it harder to try and guess how it's going to develop.
Yeah, it's very hard to know where it's going to develop. I think that until now, the main fuel for this protest was the pictures that we saw of the violent act by the police, the water cannon and the horsemen and pushing and arresting it. And it's fueled the energy of the protest, and because it rises the level of rage against the police, the government. But it's very hard to know where it's going. Yeah, I agree.
Was the police's heavy-handed and some would say brutal response, was that a reflection of the concern that Netanyahu has about these protests? And we've seen, you know, concrete barriers going up near his official residence in Jerusalem and his family home in Caesarea. And people are saying that he is frightened. Is there any truth in that?
Well, I don't know how Netanyahu feel about it. I guess he doesn't like it, but I really don't know. And I don't know what kind of order he gives the police. But I think that in that case, they show a lot of patience in the way they treat these demonstrations. It took them hours, sometimes midnight, after midnight, to start and try to disperse the demonstration. Mm. But in the end, when the passion is over, we saw the picture of violence and this is, as I said, what fueled the energy of the people there.
Mm. Is that still the case? Are these demonstrations always ending with arrests and police
until
shoving people around?
Until now, yes. Mm. Yes. In the last 2 weeks, we had about 5 big demonstrations, like the demonstration that shut down the middle of Jerusalem. Mm. And all of them ended with arrest. We count like 120 or 130 people who got arrested in those 2 weeks only. Mm. It's very unusual for Israeli protesting.
And has this been because the protesters have been more, I don't want to say violent, but have been more forceful, or because the police have been cracking down on things that would usually have been acceptable?
I think it's because the demonstrations are more energetic. There are young people who don't care about getting arrested. They came there and like they're looking for it.
Yeah.
It's not like people with family or with a career. They feel so rage about the situation, and they just came there and they stay, even after the police warned them to go home. And it became part of the event, the stage when the police came and tried to disperse them. It's part of the.
It's almost like a badge of honor to be arrested at one of these protests. Badge of dishonor, perhaps. We have to talk about the attacks on protesters, not by police, but by pro-Netanyahu supporters, perhaps egged on by the Prime Minister's vitriolic attacks on them, calling them, you know, anarchists and Bolsheviks. Who are these hotheads, Mir?
There is a group in Jerusalem under the name La Familia. It's a right-wing radical fans of the Beitar Yerushalayim football team. It's a racist group. In the past, they had many cases of violence against Arabs or against left wings, and so in the last two demonstrations in Jerusalem, we know that in their WhatsApp groups, they call people to come to them to demonstrate to show the power of the right wing in Jerusalem or something like that. And we count about 10 attacks of left-wing demonstrations that, you know, in the streets around the demonstration.
And not just in Jerusalem, though, right? There have been isolated incidents across the country.
Right. Yesterday we had one in the south and another one, I don't remember where, somewhere. Yes, we had a few, but that group is very Jerusalemite. We know it from Jerusalem.
So it does.
You have to understand that the background is that the Likud party have very little success of bringing people into the street. In Thursday, they call people to come, and they publish it. We have to come and to show that we are controlling the street, etc. And there were about 200, maybe 300 protests in the right-wing demonstration, and about 5,000 on the other side,
right,
the anti-governmental demonstration. So I think it's also a way to show the first statement from the situation where for a long time now, the left wing is controlling the street, at least in Jerusalem. They show a lot of energy, a lot of power, and in the same time, the Likud or the right wing have no power on the street.
I mean, it seems almost inevitable that there are going to be clashes between two groups of people: one who says anyone but Bibi must go, and another group that says only Bibi must stay. It seems, and the Prime Minister himself has, as I say, has been, you know, stirring up this this conflict.
Yeah, but you have to be there to see it. It's very weird because the people who demonstrate from the left, they are not violent. They are very, very not violent people. Yesterday, I saw it in my own eyes. People from this La Familia group went on inside the plaza, the place where the demonstration is, and just walk around and curse people. And I mean, you cannot imagine, like the vice versa, where a radical left wing activist will go to a right wing demonstration and just walk around, and no one will touch them. They are really not looking for violence, as much as I saw. You know, they have a custom to clean up the place after when the demonstration is over. They are collecting each piece of paper on the ground. So we don't have, you know, two groups of violence. And I have to admit that most of the right wing protests are not violent as well. You know, there are Likud party supporters, but they are not coming for fight.
Right.
There is a small groups of most of them young people who are looking for some violence, but they are the minority.
Mm.
So I don't see, you know, a scenario of clashes between civilians in the street.
Mm. Well, that's a hopeful thought.
Yeah.
So if there are no leaders and we don't really know what's going to happen next, are the protests going to continue tonight, tomorrow night?
As much as I know, the next big protest is supposed to be on next Saturday. There is a Tisha B'Av this week, so maybe they will lower the flame for a day or two. But as I feel the energy in the street, I don't see how it's end soon. There are still, in each demonstration in the last 2 weeks, we saw more and more people in each demonstration, and we saw more and more groups and organizations that came over, like, I don't know, environmental organization, youth movement, the gay community activists, the all kind of people came over and feel themselves as part of it. So for now, I don't see how it's end.
Before I let you go, Nir, today it was announced that Netanyahu's corruption trial will resume in Jerusalem on December the 6th, and that the Prime Minister will have to be there in person. Three times a week.
Since January.
That's going to impinge on his time.
No.
How do you think that this might affect his handling of the protests or his behavior in general?
Well, you ask me to figure out what's going to be like 6 months from now.
Yes, please.
Or four months from now. I mean, it's only 2 weeks since it started, this protest. This new protest. It's very hard to know. The one thing these protests don't have is the political mechanism that can translate the power from the street into a political movement that will replace Netanyahu as a prime minister.
Mm.
You cannot understand. You cannot see it. Now, if you ask the activists on the street, they will say, okay, but you cannot see it coming when it happened to Hosni Mubarak or to Menachem Begin in 82 or to Golda Meir in 74. Now, it's all true, but Netanyahu is different, as we know. He still control the Israeli political system very well, so you still cannot understand how this power from the street will be translated into a political change. So for now, I cannot imagine that the protest will stop or will vanish very soon. On the one hand, on the other hand, I cannot see how it achieve its goal, like in months or two. But I think that until the trial will start in 4 or 5 months from now, the picture will be clear.
Mm.
And I don't know, maybe we can hope that we will see a change in the Israeli political system.
Well, maybe the goal is just to create enough groundswell of anger that it builds up and builds up, and when Netanyahu does eventually break and call another election, there's enough opposition to vote him out this time. Maybe that's the goal.
Yes, maybe. Maybe the address of this protest must be not Netanyahu himself, but of course the people in the Likud and in the right wing parties and in the Haredi parties that support him, and they have no obligation. They can do the change. But for now, you don't see it coming. You don't. I mean, but who knows?
Who knows, indeed. Nir, thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome.
Stay safe out there.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Take care. Listener, stay with us. After this jingle, we'll be dialing up Judy Maltz. Hi there, Judy. How have you been keeping?
I've been doing well. How about you, Simon?
Not too bad. Not too bad. Judy, before we get into it, I've got to tell you something. Whenever I'm prepping for your appearances on the podcast, I find myself going down so many rabbit holes. The sheer range of subjects that you cover never fails to astound me. So, listener, if you want a fascinating snapshot of the really important stories in Israel and the Jewish world, bookmark Judy's author page on haaretz.com. Judy, should we start with the protests? You wrote
thank
a piece.
You.
that was unscripted, by the way, listener. You wrote a piece last week about the increasing number of young people demonstrating. Why is that even surprising, Judy? Aren't youngsters supposed to be more rebellious, more militant, you know, from Soweto to Tiananmen Square, from Greta Thunberg to Malala, right?
Well, yeah, that's a surprising thing, that everywhere else in the world that would seem to be the case. And you may remember a few months ago, in fact, I think it was published a day before the last election, we ran this huge project about young Israelis. And that was one of our key takeaways, that unlike their peers everywhere else in the world, young Israelis are pretty apathetic. You know, if you go to a demonstration at Rabin Square in Tel Aviv, it's a site of many, many demonstrations over the years, you will hardly see anyone there who doesn't have gray hair. Okay? It's a much older crowd. Young Israelis, they just didn't go out to the streets or haven't in many years. And this was a surprising thing here. Now, a couple months ago, I did a story about what was then called the Lone Protesters Movement. These were these people, most of them in their 60s and 70s, going out and standing at key intersections around the country with signs up demanding that Bibi Netanyahu resign. Nobody was paying attention to them. I spent an entire Friday morning with a guy who nobody had heard of then, named Amir Haskell. Amir Haskell, I think, is probably by now a household name in Israel, because it was his arrest at one of these lone protester demonstrations a few weeks ago that actually was the trigger for everything we're seeing today. He was arrested for really no reason, held in a cell over the weekend. He's about 70 years old, this guy. And after that, this somehow triggered the young people in Israel, and they started coming out to join him. And when you go to these demonstrations, that's one thing these people say. Thank you to the older generation who's been doing this for years while we were sitting in cafes or bars and not paying attention. Thank you. We want to take over now.
It should be the other way around, one would imagine. What was it that sparked? What was the Haskell's arrest? What was the trigger in that? That somebody who looked like their grandfather getting arrested, and that was the last straw?
Well, I think it was, you know, all the circumstances coming together at once. It was him being arrested, and of course, coronavirus is a big part of this. Now, because of the coronavirus, we have a lot of young people in Israel right now who really have nothing to do. People who finish the army, who at any other time might be taking their year-long trek in the Far East or South America or India or Africa. They can't go. Or they might be working, but there are no jobs, right? So they have nothing to do. They're very frustrated. Many of them now don't have money for rent, have to move back home with their parents. And this has, in a way, provided an alibi for them to go and get out in the streets. And it's where all the action is happening.
But is there a sense that once the pandemic is over and the jobs return and you can go to India again, that the protests will die out again?
Probably. I think, yeah, Because it's not all that clear what they're about. Except, I mean, the one common theme seems to be that everybody wants Netanyahu out. Besides that, you know, you have among the protesters anti-occupation left-wingers. You have unemployed people. You have, I think there's a lot of people who are just out there because it's, you know, it's very festive atmosphere, very lively, very colorful, and there's not much else to do, so that's where they go.
That might change if the rising tide of violence continues, though.
Well, I think if it could work both ways. You know, there might be people who will say now, oh, I'm not going to let that violence get to me. And, you know, I'm actually going to go out now. If I didn't before, now I will go out and show solidarity. Mm. Or, you know, it could scare people away. Another thing that can happen in the next week or so is that right now, the way the Israeli school year works, we still have students who are either taking their exams or submitting their final papers for their courses. Next week they're going to be out. So I have a feeling if nothing changes, there's going to even be more young people joining those out on the streets.
I saw one student at a demonstration last night who didn't let upcoming tests bother them. The sign said, don't piss me off, I have an exam tomorrow.
Yes, so, I saw that. It was great.
Lovely. Yeah. Judy, are there any leaders emerging, or is this a leaderless uprising, shall we call it? I mean, the social justice protests almost a decade ago gave us Itzik Shmuli, who's now our welfare minister, of course, and Stav Shafir. Is this a movement?
So far, I don't see any leaders, no. It's not clear who the leader of this is. You know, there's all these organizations like the Black Flag protest movement, and there's one called En Matzav, which I guess translates as No Way. Mm. Lots of little groups announcing on their social media and WhatsApp groups, you know, show up here tomorrow, this day, at this place. But as far as I can see, there's no real leader of this.
And there doesn't really appear to be any rallying cry other than no to Bibi.
Exactly. Yeah.
So they're adopting the slogan of Paris 68, be realistic and demand the impossible. So we've mentioned COVID. We know that it's played a role in fomenting dissent and frustration. It's also impacting Israel in other ways, obviously, and you've been covering immigration trends over the past few months. You reported a third group of immigrants arriving here from Ethiopia last week, but the number of total immigrants arriving in the first 6 months has plummeted by 50%.
That's right.
Are we still expecting a post-pandemic spike?
It depends upon whom you ask. If you talk to the Jewish Agency and all the other government offices that are engaged in promoting and facilitating Aliyah, they will tell you that, yes, there's going to be a huge, huge wave of immigrants once this is all over. I don't really see it happening. I don't see how it can happen. Let's not forget that a lot of these forecasts, these very rosy forecasts regarding Aliyah, they were made a few months ago when Israel was seen kind of as a model for how you successfully cope with this pandemic. Unfortunately, by now, Israel is the model for exactly the opposite. So I don't see why anyone would have an incentive now of all times to actually move to Israel. If they have a job, why would they give it up to move to a country where unemployment today, I believe a new figure shows it's hitting 21%. And if they don't have a job, all the more reason not to come to a country where there's so much unemployment and so much competition over every job. So, you know, I hope I'm proved otherwise, but I don't see it happening.
I mean, you can't help but wonder what kind of state the country will be in once this is all over anyway. But encouraging Jewish people to move here will always remain a cornerstone, presumably.
Yeah, even though, again, I'm not sure it's the most responsible thing to do at this moment, considering the state of the country right now.
Mm. Judy, thank you very much for your time. We're going to wrap it up there.
Thank you, Simon.
Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Listener, that's all we have time for this week. My thanks to Nir Hasson, Judy Maltz, producer Aaron, and of course, to you, listener. Join us again next time for another episode of Haaretz Weekly. Until then, shalom from Tel Aviv.